Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call this Finance Committee meeting to order for Tuesday, February 6th. And I'd like to start by acknowledging that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. We're very lucky to be able to live, work, and play here. So at this time, I would like to ask if there are any announcements, acknowledgments, and recognitions. And I know we do have a few on the agenda today. So I'll pass it over to Mayor Bolliver-Getson.
Thank you. February is recognized internationally as African Heritage Month. It is a time to recognize and salute the many contributions and ongoing achievements of people of African descent all over the world and here in the municipality of the District of Lunenburg in the province of Nova Scotia. The 2024 African Heritage Month theme is Our Smiles, Our Joy, Our Resilience as African Nova Scotians. During African Heritage Month, we honor the rich culture, legacy, accomplishments, and contributions of African Nova Scotians, both past and present. The theme encapsulates the enduring spirit and resilience demonstrated by people of African descent throughout the centuries in our province. Last Thursday, we held a flag-raising event at the municipal office. A number of community members attended, as did staff and council. We were honored with the performance from Pat Watson with Hank Middleton on guitar. Pat and Hank performed We Shall Overcome and What a Wonderful World. You can watch the video on our Facebook page or our YouTube channel. I encourage residents, businesses, and community groups to participate in the activities and celebrations for African Heritage Month and to take the opportunity to reflect on the story of Nova Scotia's vibrant African Nova Scotian community. I also have another statement to read. Heart disease is currently one of the leading causes of death in Canada, second only to cancer. Approximately 2.6 million Canadian adults aged 20 and older live with ischemic heart disease, the most common type of heart disease. February marks Heart Month and provides us with an opportunity to focus on the efforts we can make to improve our heart health. Although rates of heart disease in Canada have been declining, largely due to advances in research, drug therapies, and prevention efforts, there are many risk factors that still contribute to heart disease. Lifestyle changes, small and big, can help reduce your risk. These include things such as eating healthier, getting proper sleep, being physically active, managing your stress, and limiting your alcohol intake. During Heart Month, we encourage you to learn more about the risk factors for heart disease and what we can do to prevent it. Together, let's take action to improve our heart health and make healthy living a priority.
Okay, thank you very much. I believe you have another another statement.
So this is in reference to an article that appeared last week. It is important for council to highlight that the recent article in Lighthouse Now regarding the EV charging stations project does not fully and clearly explain the change in the scope of work that led to the increase in costs for the expanded project. In the 2023-2024 capital budget, we included an estimated cost for the three charging stations, six charging spots, at $120,000. The estimated cost did not include the ability for future expansion, types of charges needed for larger trucks, power source, new underground service, pad mount transformer, and accessibility. The article does not point out that the EV charging project expanded well beyond its original scope of three charge stations to also include the following: transformer pad, electrical enclosures and services, and installation of conduits, bollards, and charger bases for nine future charging stations, 18 spots. We have requested an amendment to the article to include that the original project, as contemplated in the 2023-2024 capital budget, was for the installation of 3 charge stations, 6 spots, and the scope of the project was expanded to include the 3 charge stations, 6 spots, as well as charging bases for 9 future charging stations, 18 spots, and all of the associated infrastructure, transformer pad, electrical enclosures, and services required to support the EV chargers at a cost of $270,100. In addition, it was pointed out that we took steps to ensure that the EV chargers were fully accessible by including 230 feet of curb and sidewalks with associated asphalt and landscaping reinstatement. The accessibility component of the project was $56,400. Finally, it was noted that the remaining amounts consisted of contingency of $33,650 and net HST $15,865 to make up the total project cost of $386,015.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Is there anybody else who has any announcements, acknowledgments, or recognitions? No? Okay. Seeing none, is there anyone here for public input? And I'm not seeing anybody raise their hand or move forward. So at this time, I'd like to ask for approval of the agenda as circulated, if I could have a motion.
Can I add something?
Certainly.
If there's time under, added items, Councillor Security.
Councillor Security?
You have to make a motion.
Would you like to make a motion to
yes,
add that to the agenda?
Yes, I would love to make a motion to add that to the agenda.
Okay.
Thank you.
Moved by Councillor Greek and seconded by Mayor Balliver-Getson. All those in favor for the addition to the agenda? And that is passed unanimously. Sorry, Councillor Statton?
Yes.
Thank you. That is passed unanimously. Thank you. So there is an addition to the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda? Thank you, from Councillor Moore and seconder Councillor Oikle. All those in favor? Councillor Statton?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion is passed. So next we will move to the approval of the minutes of the December 5th meeting as circulated. Could I have a motion to approve? Councillor Vino and a seconder? Councillor Hubley? All those in favor? Councillor Statton?
Yes.
Passed unanimously. Thank you. And is there any business arising from the minutes? No? Okay. Seeing none, we do have a presentation scheduled for 9:15, and we do have a little bit of time here. I'm not sure if the... Is the presenter ready? Yes? Do you want to start now? Okay, wonderful. So our first presentation is from South Shore Open Doors Association, and Christy Thibault is going to be doing the presentation. So if you want to come forward and...
There
we go. Okay. Sorry, give us a moment.
What are we doing wrong?
try the mic?
Hello.
There we go. Hello. Okay. Wonderful. So we'll pass it over to you.
So is this too close? No. Okay. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for having me, and thanks to Alex for making this connection for me to join. This had been on my agenda to make myself known here and pay a visit, so I'm really glad that Alex encouraged for me to come here. And hello to people behind me as well. So for anyone that doesn't know who SOTA is or how we became, I'm going to give a quick overview. I know time is limited, and this is a pretty juicy topic that we could talk about all day. So we are a nonprofit located in Bridgewater. We do serve two counties, both Lunenburg and Queens. Our home office is 373 King Street, right next to MLA Becky Druin. And where SOTA was born, for anyone that can recall, through the Smart Cities Challenge through the town of Bridgewater that was awarded to them in 2019. And through community consultation, it was identified that energy poverty was a priority in the town and that it was a high need and something that they wanted to explore. And to have a nonprofit to help, you know, funnel through the households to do some energy upgrades, make some renovations and the retrofit programs. During that time, it was quickly identified once we opened our doors in 2022 that, yes, that was a high need, but there was also another big issue in the community, and that was a homelessness and a housing crisis that was really coupled during the pandemic. So it was really a quick change, because what the original plan was just to work with, you know, with 1.5 staff, work on energy upgrades, and thought that maybe people could even work from home working on this issue. And it was going to be just two little programs. They're national approaches. Now, this is, I promise this is the only wordy slide, but it's national language, so I want to make sure that I get it right every time. So the two things that they thought they could, that was always needed, was a coordinated access system, and that's a program by which, I'm going to read it, individuals and families experiencing energy poverty and housing insecurity are provided navigation to access housing support services, and this is all based on a standardized procedure for intake, assessment of need, and referral. So basically just one entity that hopefully can do navigation and send out resources and make referrals. When you hear that term, you know, only one right door and, or no wrong door. So that was the hope, and that is what we're doing now. And the other piece to that, to address homelessness, was to create a by-name list. And this is a living document that we have had since we opened our doors. And it's a real-time list of folks experiencing homelessness, and it includes a robust set of data points that support our coordinated access system and prioritize our households, and an understanding of the homelessness inflow and outflow at a system level. And this is where a lot of our data comes from, for anyone that has ever seen any of our posts on social media and the things we mail out on a monthly list. So for anyone that's visual, I always like to provide this, because that is so wordy. Here it is. So you can picture us in the middle there. You know, we have the different levels of government and our funders, the resources in the community, other agencies, like whether it's Harbor House, Senior Safety, Mental Health and Addictions, all of those, and the other programs that exist in our community. So folks come to, through SOTA, access everything. Well, if there is everything, we're doing it great, and we have every resource out there. But anything that is available to them that they identified at intake that we can help with. So some of the things we help with right in-house, some are just a referral, some of them is just to go on our by-name list because they're looking for housing. So once we opened in 2022, there was another agency in our area that was funded by the province, Department of Community Services, and AHANS, the Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia. And that was something you might have heard it called Freeman House or Family Service Association of Western Nova Scotia. So as soon as SOTA launched in May of 2022, the ED at the time was approached to say, would you like to take on all of the programs that Freeman House had? Otherwise, they're not going to stay in the community. So basically, there was just 1.5 staff, and then that ended up becoming 6, and then eventually 7. So we had to find an office very quickly to support all these services. So basically, if we didn't have that, we would have just been SOTA doing coordinated access, and if Freeman Host existed, then we would have been referring to them. But now we were referring our services in-house. And I'm going to get to those services. So as you can see at the top, that was the original intent coordinated access system with our household navigation. On top of that, then we were asked to take on a trustee program. So that's for folks to assist, you know, with financial literacy. It really helps with eviction prevention and housing retention. They can have their income through income assistance or their employment come straight to us. We pay the agreed upon bills that relate to their housing and their rent so that folks know their housing is secure because everything has been paid, and then they get the remainder to spend on the rest of their needs. So that program was brought on, and housing support services. So that is three housing support workers and an intensive case manager. And that works with folks to get housed and stay housed. And if they are, you know, struggling to be housed, to work on goals and readiness so that when housing does become available, they will be able to, you know, sign that lease and get that damage deposit ready. Hope I'm doing okay for time. All right. So, and then this is our most exciting new services that has been added on, which I think maybe a lot of folks here may have heard about. If you haven't, in October, we were approached by the Department of Community Services to open a temporary winter shelter. It's a six-month contract, and it's for folks 19 years of age and older. And that's located in the Lutheran Church on Phoenix Street in Bridgewater. It's a 15-bed capacity. And we take anyone from either county. So if you are speaking to anyone in your constituency and you hear of them needing shelter, please send them our way. The phone number is on the bottom there. Or you can also just send them to SOTA at our office during the day, and we will make sure they get the information they need to get to the shelter. And if you hear of folks that are needing transportation, please don't let that be a barrier. We will do our best to figure that out. We can't do transportation every day. We don't have a bus or anything like that, but we can, you know, get a one-off transportation covered so folks can get there. And that's going to be open every night until April 30th. And when they're there, they are being fed two meals, so they get an evening meal and snacks, coffee, tea, and they get a breakfast before they leave. For anyone who hasn't heard as well, we partnered with Souls Harbor to extend their daytime hours. So in the community in Bridgewater, we have 24-hour coverage. We provide the 12 starting at 8 p.m., and Souls Harbor provides the 12 following at 8 a.m., and they will be fed there as well. Okay. So we are meeting a whole another need as well for the food security.
And so I just have a question. Mayor Ballard-Getson?
So for clarification, you said if you know anybody from the other county. Are you referring to the two municipalities, or are you referring to Lunenburg, Queens?
Yep, Lunenburg and Queens. So for most part, all of our folks are walking to our shelter, so transportation is...
So this has provincial funding in it to cover these costs?
Yes, through our provincial funding through Department of Community Services.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, because that is such a barrier for our rural communities and our rural folks. We can do a lot of work by phone, but the shelter is not... We need to get them there. So,
Deputy Mayor Oigel.
I'm just wondering, will you be talking anything about our vulnerable teens that may need shelter in the winter because of various reasons that they're not able to be at home?
So I'm just going to finish the stats for the winter shelter. For anyone that has been wondering, we get a lot of these emails, what the average occupancy is, and it's around 8 to 9 every night. So we haven't been full yet, and that's a relief because I don't want to be that staff that has to tell folks they can't come in. Our biggest night was New Year's Eve. I guess it was a party. There was 14, so that was the closest we've been to being full. But on average, it's 8 or 9. And, yes, so the age restriction is part of DCS policy. If someone presents under 18, they're not able to come in, and that's because a youth shelter is a completely separate mandate. So that would have to be, for example, like they wouldn't be able to be mixed. We were just approached to do 19 years of age and older. I suspect we will see something else for youth coming very soon, but it would typically be served by a youth-serving agency that specializes in youth and the care that they require. It's a whole other separate liability. As you know, we do have shelters in HRM, but nothing near us. And it definitely is a gap, and that's a gap that's identified all the time at intake here. Hopefully I'm not going over time. So this is something that if anyone is on our website or gets our monthly infographics, you will see that this is the data that we are constantly collecting. And up until SOTA came, no one was collecting this data, and this has been so crucial to present to all levels of government to, you know, show the issue, as it's really commonly said, homelessness isn't an issue here. Well, for us and for anyone attached to this demographic, we know that that is not the case. So I'll quickly just go over a couple of these things just to help clarify some of the numbers.
Before you start, Mayor Belver-Getson.
Just the catchment area that you're using, and are these self-identified?
Yes, so these are the folks that have come through our doors, and I do have a slide next to show the communities that they come from. So since we opened our doors, we have served 444 households. So that could be an individual or a family. We only just count them as, you know, one unit, so whether it's single, a couple, or a couple with children, or different generations. So we've done 444 intakes since May of 2022. And of our current lists, you can see that we have 42 seniors on our by-name list that are currently experiencing homelessness, and we are attached to 54 children who are insecurely housed. So that doesn't necessarily mean they're living on the street, but they're not living in ideal homes that fit their family needs, or they're going to be potentially facing eviction or couch surfing. And 126 total are currently experiencing homelessness. So you'll see if you're attached to anything that we send out, we do update these monthly. And these are only the folks that come through our door. So we know that it's definitely likely higher, especially in rural areas who can't access us as well. I think this is the next question would be, where are the folks coming from? Now, of course, Bridgewater is going to be the highest, where that's where we're located. You can walk to us. But the second one is municipality of the District of Lunenburg. And we continue to keep track of these, especially important for when reporting back to our funders and reporting back to government in the tables that we sit at, as this data hadn't been calculated before. And if anyone is interested in receiving these updates, I'll share the email at the end so you can be added. And we're also in the process of doing a shelter update as well.
Councillor Moore has a question, and then after that I'd like us to hold our questions till the end of the presentation.
Okay. Thank you. With the MODL one, is there a breakdown of communities?
So there is. It's a much deeper dive into the data. We only have one person. This is their position, but I could probably get to work on that for you, but it would definitely take some time.
Mm-hmm.
But because when we first started collecting this data, we were very new to the game, and we still are quite young, but that is something that we could potentially refine if that's something that you'd be interested in. And this is the first time I've presented data for this municipality.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. And I should include that this data does not include January, because I had to submit the slides before the end of January, and it was still being tabulated. So you will soon see an updated data that is going to be sent out. So one thing I wanted to touch on is just the difference between when we're hearing about homelessness and we're hearing about resources, often rural is left off, we're left off the table. They're using like a more urban lens. And I always like to talk about how different it is for our folks here in rural. Even the difference for the folks trying, you know, outside of Bridgewater. So, for example, like in Bridgewater, there is transportation, there's public transit. We have bus passes that we give out. We have passes for folks to go to the LCLC to use their drop-in for free. So for our folks outside of town limits, it's even more tricky. And it's trickier to get the food supports where folks in town can access Souls Harbor, have a daily meal, the food bank. So things are just much more difficult, and the budget is already very, very tight. But when we're living in rural, the budget is even tighter. They're having to own transportation, most likely, which might take up the entire budget. And whenever they need to access resources like ourselves, mental health and addiction, the programs at the library, even anything for their children, the transportation costs are high, and it's really hard on the budget. And even for folks like us, our budgets are tight, too, for our staff, where we're a nonprofit, to be accessing and doing, like, because we do home visits. And the farther we stretch out into rural, the farther, the tighter it is on our budgets as well to be providing transportation. And the other piece is for our folks is internet and cell phone service. And it's, you know, a safety risk for the people we serve, but also for the staff to be sending, you know, a lone worker down a rural road without service. So I always just like to highlight that wherever I'm going, because there's often an urban lens to the work we do. We're talking about Metro. And, I mean, yes, Metro has, you know, so many more resources than we have. And our clients tell us they can be fed all day, every day in Metro. But I always like to include this for any time I'm speaking in a rural community, just to highlight, and also because it's commonly said that homelessness isn't an issue here, so we know different. Okay, so all of my slides can be a little bit gloomy, but this is my favorite one to share, that since we opened our doors, we have moved 107 households and individuals off that by-name list that I was telling you about earlier, match them to housing. And once January data comes in, that's going to be higher. I know of at least 5, so hopefully more. So we're hitting, you know, we're moving past the 100. I was so excited when we hit 100 in November. So, I mean, it's small wins we have to celebrate because this work, this sector is difficult. It's a national crisis that little folks like us and yourselves are trying to, you know, figure out what we can do. So I do love to share this slide at the end that, you know, there is hope, and amongst, you know, the data and some of it, you know, is very depressing. There is good things happening, and we are not going to give up. So this is the slide I was talking about at the end that I'll leave this up for the question period as well. So our general line is, so if you know of anyone that you would like to send our way, that's the top number. That's the best place to start, or email if they don't have phones. A lot of our folks don't. And there's my information at the bottom. If you'd like to be added to our list to get our shelter updates and our monthly mail out that we do, that's the number, the email on the bottom. But really, any of the emails will get you to any of the things you need. So I imagine there's plenty of questions.
Thank you very much for that presentation.
So,
no, don't worry. Don't worry. This is interesting and important information for us. So opening the floor to questions, Councillor Hubley.
I don't really have a question. I'm a little overwhelmed. I just want to thank you for what you do.
Thank you. And I want to thank you folks as well for the contribution that you provided to our shelter before Christmas. Thank you.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
Thank you. And again, I reiterate the thanks, I guess, on behalf of council for everything that is being done in relation to our homeless and individuals in need. In our municipality, we see over and over again shelters, temporary shelters, RVs, cars parked, individuals living in subadequate places without proper, I guess, plumbing, water, whatever. But a lot of these individuals, transportation is a huge issue as well. And I know the higher numbers that you're serving is from the town of Bridgewater. They're able to walk in.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was 9, you said, on 8 or 9 on a regular basis, are overnighting
shelter
at the Lutheran,
yeah,
Church Hall. Are they mainly from the town of Bridgewater and able to walk?
The majority, yes, I would say, are coming from a walking distance. Now, some of the folks have also decided to come to Bridgewater for the winter. So they have left places like New Germany is a common area because they know that they could come here and spend the night and have, you know, guaranteed,
yep,
5 to 6 months if they choose to do so. But that also means people are displacing from the communities that they call home, which is not ideal. But the hope is that when they're with us, that we can work on some of the things that they're not able to work on when they're separated from us, to make the better connections, whether it's employment solutions, get some resumes, get their taxes done. That's huge because folks are missing out on a lot of benefits by not having their taxes done. So those are a lot of the things that we do with the navigation piece. So when folks intake through us, we go, it's a, you know, 20-minute process, and we ask all the questions to see what we can get working on, because all of these things contribute to the situation that they're in and also are all a lot of barriers to housing. If they're missing out on, you know, home heating rebates because their taxes aren't done, they're missing out on subsidies, that's also, you know, bringing that budget down and making things already that are very tight even tighter. So the folks in the that are coming in from, you know, outside the area, we are encouraging them to stay and work with us to try to make a plan for when April 30th comes, that we are in a better place. I could ask the shelter manager to get me some of the stats of, you know, the folks, because every time they come to the shelter, they also are intake. So we're collecting data that goes into an information system that's provided federally. For anyone, it's called HIFIS. It's the Homeless Homeless Individuals and Families Information System. And that is what we use to collect all of our data to go back to the federal government. And when you are funded through AHANS, that is part of the requirements as well. And the town of Bridgewater has also put that as part of the contract so that we can collect it anonymously and send it back by community. So I would be able to find out what community they're identifying when they present at the shelter, unless they choose to not disclose.
So just one more for now. And
there's
that's
a lot.
Of the 107 that you've been mm-hmm. able to find housing for, I believe it was 444,
yeah.
was it? Intake? Yeah. So there's 337. Do we know if they are currently still seeking housing arrangements? And in the, I guess, in between, we've seen roughly 125 were from the municipality, 50 from Queens County, and so on. I guess, are those the individuals that I'm seeing living in subadequate housing throughout our districts?
Yeah, so of the, we still have 126 attached to us there on the end.
Okay.
The first number, and those are the folks that are still attached to us on our list looking to be matched to housing. Now, some of them may just be, you know, some of them are in an Airbnb and they are going to be, you know, pending eviction. Some of them are staying with family. So not all of them are necessarily living
Yeah.
Now the numbers in between are folks who may have left our community or moved along and moved off our list, or this population is very transient and just move, or they don't keep their phone and they don't keep in touch with us. After so long of not being in touch with us, they will come off the list because we have folks that are engaging and doing the work, and that's where the prioritization comes in. Some will move along to HRM or maybe incarceration or different reasons.
I do have a little bit.
Sure. It's okay. I'm fine. But
yeah, I know, but I don't want to. And the other question, you mentioned New Germany. And I guess we've partnered with Lunenburg County Wheels to provide transportation somewhat. Is it still a barrier, the cost that's associated with getting from point A to point B for housing or meals, whatever?
Yeah.
And that's my
When I met with them, I did share with them how we have tickets with Bridgewater Transit when I met with the Lunenburg County Wheels back in the fall, and did propose that something like that could be, you know, supported through a grant of some sort. I know it's out there for active transportation and things like that. And the United Way is a wonderful funder who funds the tickets for the Bridgewater Transit.
Thank you. Councillor Moore.
Thank you. Now that in public that you have mentioned one community. I do represent the people in that area and surrounding. And plus, when they say New Germany, it could be anywhere from New Germany to Bass Corner to Hempford to whenever. Do you reach out to the, because we know our people, do you reach out to the elected officials and get information about if there's any other kind of help that we can help you with? Or is it kind of a confidential thing?
Yes. So our programs are voluntary. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of our folks might be referred by someone else they're working with through their school or through another health professional or another agency they visit. So our folks do come. It's a voluntary program. And when they are intaked, they are bound by
okay.
confidentiality and privacy. There's a lot of information that we hold, but also it's a lot of sensitive and private
okay.
things.
If I may? So any time I say from myself to my neighboring councillors and the mayor and everybody else, you could ask for us for information because we do have resources that we can call and get information. You don't have to give us names because of confidentiality, but we're there to help you.
Wonderful, thank you. And that's part of our resource navigation piece, too,
thank
is
you.
Making the connections so that we have more things to add to our toolbox. And where this is such a growing, you know, issue and there's a lot of attention on that, we are seeing, you know, a lot of expansions and programs, like through the YMCA, a lot of new things that are coming to support our folks. So anything that we can add when we're going through intake to make that referral is good. It's like I made another connection last night when I was speaking at another council of a new program. So anything is awesome to be sent to the email, and I'll book a meeting. Lots of meetings.
Councillor DeLong.
Thank you. I was actually going to ask about, Lunenburg County Wheels, so that was already answered, but I've been watching SOTA since its inception, and I'm very impressed. It's so good to see this in the community and very needful. Are you connected with SHAC?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm on the planning committee for SHAC. Okay. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you.
We met Fancy Pants, I remember.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that, too.
Councillor Hubley.
I just sent you an email while I was sitting here. I am a volunteer for the Canadian Volunteer Income Tax Program, and I currently support at Souls Harbor. So I sent you my contact information, and, yeah, I'm available.
That time is coming.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Deputy Mayor Oigle.
Thank you. I'm just wondering about a mailbox program for people who don't have a home, which means they wouldn't have a way in order to get those refunds that you were mentioning, or even being able to receive any money funding, and or even participate in a PharmaCare program without having a mailbox, being able to receive information or to give information.
So we have it set up that folks can use our PO box as well for that, because that comes with a lot of safety things too for folks fleeing any form of violence or transient folks. So we have a PO box and we have a lot of mail that comes to us and then we get it to our people. Yeah.
Okay, and if there are no further questions, I will ask just one brief one. Are you seeing your numbers go up or down over time since 2022? I mean, I understand there's still lots of people that are waiting to be housed, but are your intake numbers going up or down?
Okay, so obviously when we first opened our doors, the trajectory was like this.
Right.
And it was the phones ringing off the hook. You couldn't, the mailbox was full. We couldn't keep up with it. Because that was, like, I think, just playing a lot of catch-up. We were new to the scene, and no one has been doing this work at that point. So then there was, like, the numbers were so high in the beginning, like hundreds at the beginning. But now the number has, you know, plateaued to around 20 per month.
Okay.
And I mean, at that, I do feel like that makes sense because given the population that we're serving, there's only going to be so many, and it's going to be, but then, I mean, people move in and out, but that the large numbers at the beginning was just due to us being new and collecting the information and getting connected to the people that needed us. So now it's between, you know, 20, 25 per month. And when you get the monthly infographic, you will see that we do include how many folks, new folks that we've intaked per month.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. I know this is a very important topic, and I think probably a lot of us are thinking about it a little bit differently, especially with the weather that we had over the weekend and recognizing the impact that it has on people. Thank you very much. Okay. I will keep going through the agenda here. So consideration of correspondence, there was nothing, and also recommendations from council, there was nothing on this agenda. So moving on to staff reports, I would like to draw your attention to 10.1.1, the 24-25 proposed area rates for streetlights, hydrants, and sewer. And Angie Vino is going to lead us through that.
Good morning. Enclosed are the proposed streetlights budgets along with the fire hydrants and sewer rates for fiscal year 24-25. The streetlight and hydrant rates are calculated based on prior year's revenues collected minus the actual costs. The current year's property assessment and any estimated overage and shortages on the accounts are included in the calculation. The sewer rates were set in December 2019, and they're based on a five-year sewer rate review, and 2024-25 marks the fifth year for the approved rates. It is recommended that the Finance Committee recommend Municipal Council to approve the 2024-25 fire hydrant rate at 0.1334 per 100 of assessment, the street lights as presented, and the sewer rates at 43 cents per 100 of assessment for the global rate and 25 cents per 100 of assessment for the head fill rate.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions about this report? Councillor Moore.
Thank you. The flat rate properties, it seems like because, of course, assessments went up, that the rate for the assessment, like Riverport, Daysbury, New Germany, Cotillion Place, and Pine Haven subdivision are all going to go down a couple of cents. But the flat rate properties, looks like they're all going up. Would it make sense for those flat rate properties to be charged by the assessment?
Go ahead, Elena. Well, I was just going to say that it would make sense, but that's what the communities voted
right
on when they...
Okay.
They'd have to go through another vote, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
Having said that, though, they're based on assessments, so it would depend on the dollar value of their assessment whether or not it's actually higher or lower.
Okay.
Correct? So that the increase in assessment is falsely lowering the cost because the cost of the street light.
And should the person
yeah.
paying
yeah.
have a higher assessment pay
so
more for their
I'm not convinced lights. That their bill will be any will be lower at the end of the day, I guess would be my comment for street lights.
I turn my mic off. Councillor Statton.
Yeah, I'm just a question about the Headville sewer rate that is so much lower than, and I know there's an agreement in place for that, and I'm just wondering when that agreement might run out, and is there any room for negotiation there? Because the sewer rate's been held for a long time at that low rate, and it seems a bit unfair to everyone else that's paying a higher sewer rate.
There's going to be another, this is year five of the five-year length of this rate, sewer rates, so they'll be assessed next year.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. At this time, I'd like to ask Deputy Mayor Oikel if she would read the motion.
Certainly. To the Chair and members of the Finance Committee, I move that the Finance Committee recommend to Council that Municipal Council approve the 24-25 fire hydrant rate at 0.1334 for every $100 of assessment, the 2425 street light rate as presented, the 2425 sewer rate at 43 cents per every 100 of assessment for global rate and 25 cents per 100 of assessment for the Hebville rate, and I so move.
Moved by Deputy Mayor Oikel and seconded by Councillor Bell. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Councillor Bell.
Thank you. I just want to point out that Councillor Moore and myself went through a number of years that it was very uncomfortable to serve the residents who have the service of gray water treatment. And the 43 cents per 100 is actually a very big improvement. The reason I mention this is I recently received an email from an individual in Conquerall Bank who complained to me that they were paying 43 cents. And I tried to explain to them that that is a good price. And their comment to me, well, I came from another province, and we always got it for free. And I explained to them it's not a free charge. It was probably covered under your general taxes. The only reason I make this comment is that this council went through extensive work, supported by staff, presenting figures to get to this 43 cents. And it does curl the hair up on my neck when I get an email like that. So, and as Councillor Statton said, there was negotiations. Some went one way, some went the other. And I will be glad when we have the opportunity to review this again so that all council can understand how we got to this figure and the differential figures between the two wastewater districts. But I want to emphasize that it was the work of all of council who were able to help out Councillor Moore and myself, and I thank you for that.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or discussion on the motion? Okay.
Question.
Question is called for. All those in favor? Councillor Statton?
Yes.
Motion is passed. Okay, we'll move down to 10.1.2, which is the operating variance report for the third quarter, and I will hand it over to Elena Wenzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is your third quarter operating variance report. You know that we do this to give you an idea of what's going on since we set the budget last April. And so what we're actually projecting is an operating surplus of $2.9 million, which represents 7.49% over our operating budget. So the revenue variance is $2 million about, and the expenditure variance is just $921,000. There is a detailed report, and if you wish, I'll share the screen and we can look at it together. How do we live stream it?
Is it back here?
Oh, that's it.
Yes. I think.
Oh, there we go. Two minds. We got it all going. Thank you, April. So some of the variances we've already kind of gone over. So anything that's highlighted in yellow are new ones that have come up since you've seen your second quarter report. So I thought I'd just kind of we'll look at the page, and if you have any questions as we go page by page, if that's the will of the committee, we'll do that. So the biggest change on this quarter is under regional building inspections. Now, as you all know, we did budget a full year regional building service, which hasn't really come to fruition yet. So we had to make some adjustments on the expectation of revenues coming from that service. However, we also had to offset that by expenditures, so you'll see that on the other page. Our interest revenue continues to grow as the Bank of Canada rates are much higher than what we had anticipated when we set the budget last March. Well, when I think we did the calculations in March, when we set it in April. There was some unused training budget and conference budget in the administration department, so you see that $10,000 variance, and also some unused monies in legal advisory services. A lot of that has to do with our equity and diversity, inclusive diversity, equity, and accessibility coordinator. That position hasn't come to full fruition yet. Legal fees were less than expected, and safety and other consulting services were less than expected, and that gave us $162,000 variance.
Okay, are there any questions on this page? Okay, seeing none, carry on.
Sure. Okay, so we'll go to the next one. So we'll finish up on the revenues a little bit in buildings. Administration, building supplies, advertising, and data processing. So a little bit on municipal services, building maintenance and planning and advertising costs are down about $16,000. A little reduction on municipal celebrations cost of $1,400, and insurance is variance at $33,400. Our insurance renews in October, so we put a very conservative estimate on what we thought would happen with that.
Mayor Bellever-Getson.
So I guess in light of that, I haven't seen our insurers coming to us in our other organizations as well. Are we expecting another big increase this year? It was 15 or so percent last year.
It was, and I think we budgeted just over 20, so we were a little high. So
but do we know? Have we had any indication yet?
I have not.
It may be worthwhile reaching out to find out. I'm not sure where the market is, but last year I know that they were coming to us explaining their increase. So hopefully that's a sign it's not.
Yeah, and we will certainly bring that to you when we start our budget deliberations on the operating budget next month, so we'll have that information by that time. So in our grant section, there's just some reductions in some of the actual grants that were given out to some of the community groups. Some of the insurance wasn't as expensive or didn't cost as much. Travel grants, things like that. There was an increase in our ProKids grants, but those will be dealt with through our ProKids reserves that we have. Under fire protection, and just a little bit, the Cookeville hydrant costs were $5,000 over our budget, and our fire personnel insurance was over budget as well. Emergency measures, we all know we had quite an emergency here in the summer, so we have an increase in our REMO costs of about $20,000. But we didn't put out a shelter grant of about 10, so that's going to be a little bit offset there for the 10 differential. Protective inspection services, this is where you'd see your regional building service reduction based on what we expect the cost to come in at for that service as staff continue to work on getting agreements signed to implement that regional service. We, in the engineering section under common services is what it's called in our financial reporting. There was a vacant position which contributed to the variance, the $47,000 variance there. And in planning and zoning, there was a $4,300 variance just based on actual staff training and travel.
Any questions on this page?
Okay.
Seeing none.
Okay, so under economic development, we do have the internet services agreement that we have been contributing to for the past several years to get connectivity through the municipality. There is an estimated reduction of $249,000. That's a flow through to the internet service providers. However, we will be seeing that coming up in our next budget as we work with those providers to ensure the connectivity throughout the municipality. And the community hub has been delayed. We know that. That's our agreement with Lumia across the way. So that's coming, but it was delayed in this operating budget, so we don't. That's a variance. And under financing and transfers, we did have a reserve transfer for paved shoulders in Martins River when council approved that budget overage with the partnership with the Nova Scotia Public Works. And that would bring you to your total percentage variance of 7.49%.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
So again, I believe we were told that the financial indicator that the province uses for being, I guess, conservative in our budget, that we have a surplus, and the surplus in the past would have been deemed negative from that point, but they do not use those indicators for the budget piece for being a surplus or a deficit at this. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. They have removed the budget differential under the financial condition
because
indicators.
We were penalized if we did a good. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Ms. Wenzel? No? Okay. We can move along to the capital status and CCBF investment report for the third quarter. And again, that's Ms. Wenzel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So you have before you, and I'll share my screen here in a moment, your capital status and Community Canada Building Fund report, which gives you status on the projects approved in this fiscal year. All our projects are moving forward, and we can say that of the $9.4 million budget, up to the end of the third quarter, we had only paid out $1.9 million. However, there's a lot of invoices to come that we haven't received yet, and we have a forecast of $6.7 million to be completed by year end. So I will bring this up. And I didn't highlight anything because we did change the way we show this report to council. We thought it was important that you see your projects and then see the explanation on the update. And so you see your approved budget, the actual amount was spent by end of December, the total anticipated cost is the next column, and then that total is anticipated cost versus your budget. So, for example, on this page, accessibility legislation placeholder, we're not using those monies as a placeholder anymore. All of our projects are now scoped and built using the accessibility lens, and that was something that the mayor did mention about in the EVs chargers at the beginning of the meeting, that, you know, we used accessibility monies that were actually already in our budget to do that project. So I guess, is there anyone has any questions on this page? I don't really want to.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
I guess the good news was around our Mark Ball fields that we actually did save money. We had budgeted $400,000, and the total cost anticipated it to be around $125,000. So that's in relation to our grub infestation that we had. So that is good news that we have that under control and anticipate all the fields being open this year.
Okay, I'll move to the next page. I don't want to go too quick, but oops, sorry. Let's see if this will work better. No, it won't. Ah, there we go. I don't know. We bought some electric vehicles ahead of time, so we spent more than what our project budget was, but that was anticipated and approved by council, and we know those are going to give us cost savings going forward and meets our climate change action plan goals. I know that the assessment at the CES building has come in under budget, so that's good to have that report.
Are there any questions about this page? I'm not seeing any.
I guess one of the things you can look at on this page is our internet, which we kind of report it twice. We report it in operating, but we also report it on this report as because it's the money's coming from the Canada Community Building Fund. And you can see that our anticipated cost is $201,000, and we had a discussion that we're planning on carrying the rest over.
Any questions? No? Okay.
I guess one of the big things on this page is we finished the trail next door and had the opening.
Any questions? No?
Okay, sorry. I could keep talking, but you don't want to hear that. Okay. Yeah, on this page, we talked about the paved shoulders already in the operating side, and we know that our anticipated budgets were very small compared to what paving really costs, and we know for future that when we budget for paving, we'll have to ensure that we have those bigger numbers in our budget.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
Although it looks like we're showing a cost saving there of many hundreds of thousands of dollars on the pickleball court. That will be carried over in the next budget to complete that project at the center schools.
Yes, because the tender's been issued.
The tender has
That's
been
correct.
Put out.
Yeah, it was because of the moving of the yes. location and things like that, it slowed us down this year.
Are there any other questions? Okay.
General wastewater, things are happening there. We're working on the Cookeville plant expansion, Cookeville I&I, all of those things are kind of moving forward.
And so some of these numbers are quite a bit under, but we anticipate that there will be more costs before the end of the fiscal year.
Yes, the anticipated cost is what we expect, because it's hard to explain, but this is just showing you how much was spent at the end of December.
Right.
So if there was
by the time that projects, things get done, like construction, and then they're reviewed and the invoices are approved, it can take several months for that to happen. So it's just a lag mm-hmm. on the time of, it's timing, essentially, on the timing that the work was done where the will, before the bills were paid.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just a comment to piggyback on that. The total project anticipated cost is as of the year end.
That is correct. Yes.
Okay. Carry on.
Oh, sorry. Must be a better way to do this. Okay, and this is the last of your wastewater. And it shows us that we've, of our $9.4 million, we spent $1.9 million. We expect by the end of the year we'll have $6.7 million of our projects completed. So a lot of projects were completed. A few that weren't were things that got delayed kind of out of our control. A lot of them were.
Okay, are there any other questions about the variance report? I'm not seeing any, so thank you very much for that. I think at this time, yeah, we might take a 5-minute break, and then we will return to carry on with our presentation from the Seahawks minor football. So 5-minute break.